Hi, I'm Leon Hines, and this is How to Fall Apart with the Irish Cancer Society. COVID has made it very difficult for all charities to rely on their traditional methods of fundraising. Every October, the ICS would typically hold coffee mornings around the country in order to raise funds and awareness for breast cancer, but this year that is not possible. It means that we need to find other ways of supporting the absolutely vital work that the Society does to ensure breast cancer patients and their families have access to support services. You can donate online to both help support breast cancer patients and back vital research. Every year, one in five of the people who contact the Society's specialist cancer nurses have concerns relating to breast cancer. The work the Irish Cancer Society does provides support on every step of a person's journey. The point of this podcast is always to tell the story of difficult times survived in order to help those currently experiencing their own challenges. To provide comfort and solidarity by offering a sense of a shared experience, a confirmation that you are not the only one to have felt this way. I've interviewed many people who have gone through cancer, and every one of them speaks of the importance of finding their support group, a network of people who have in the past or who currently are experiencing the same thing, who get it exactly from the inside out, and who therefore normalise your experience and reassure you that you are not alone in feeling like this, provide a sense of hope that you too will come out the other side. COVID has isolated us all, and so finding or creating such support groups is more challenging now. This series of How to Fall Apart aims to be a virtual support group. We will talk to women who have themselves received a cancer diagnosis on coping with treatment, living with cancer, and what happens in the aftermath. We will also speak to a number of health professionals, GPs, consultants, and nurses, for advice on different stages of the process. We would ask that at this time, when we cannot hold the very necessary coffee mornings in person, you would consider making a donation on cancer.ie. On this episode, I'm talking to mother of two, Sarah Donovan, who was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in 2019. After undergoing a double mastectomy, 15 rounds of chemotherapy and 15 rounds of radiotherapy, Sarah is now cancer-free. Genetic testing showed that Sarah carries the BRCA2 gene, meaning she underwent surgery in recent months to have her ovaries removed. This series is in conjunction with the Irish Cancer Society as part of this year's Cups Against Breast Cancer campaign, which is proudly supported by Centra.
So it was Saturday morning in early May. I was in the shower and I just felt this lump all of a sudden in my chest. And I kind of said to the doctors as well, when I found it, like, I say it arrived because it wasn't there during the weekend. It was so prominent, you couldn't help. You would notice it because it was so big. So I was always like very breast aware. So
were you?
Yeah, I'd always be, even unknown to myself, like my friends were like kind of, Jesus, you're the one that got breast cancer and I'm always the one checking. And they'd nearly be asking me, going, how do I do this? And I'd be like showing them, put the arm up and, you know, go along your collarbone up into your armpit and check your boobs. So I always done this, watching TV, unknown to myself, even when if I was out like in a restaurant, not saying I'd be in a restaurant having a feel, but it was just like, I'd be kind of just unknown, okay. Kind of just messing around.
And was that like, because had you had a family member?
No, I just, in my head, it was the thing to do. You just always kind of check yourself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I got to a stage where I was constantly doing it, but it wasn't a worry. I wasn't, Jesus, oh my God, I'm going to get breast cancer. That was never in my head. It was just something that women do. Mm-hmm. You check your breasts and you go and you get smear tests. You know, there are just things that you have in my head.
Yeah.
So it kind of just became out of habit. I would always do it. So, the Saturday morning early, I found this lump. And I was like, Jesus, that doesn't feel right. Because it was rock hard. Like, so surprising how big it was. Mm. And it was that big. It was more, Jesus, it couldn't be breast cancer. Mm. Sure, why, you know, you wouldn't. I suppose it's like these things don't happen to you. And I wasn't at that stage roaring, going, oh my God, I have breast cancer. It was more like, Jesus, it couldn't be. It's massive, you know. Mm. I always thought breast cancer lumps would be kind of like a P-shaped, mm-hmm. tiny lump. So I went about my day. I can't even remember if I said to my husband that morning, but, you know, because everything's busy. There's loads of stuff, sports, everything on a Saturday with the kids and all the rest. So that evening then, I just remember, like, my husband was sitting on the bed reading my daughter Anya a story, mm-hmm. and I was just tidying around the bedroom, mm-hmm. and I bent over cleaning up, and whatever way I bent, I was just like, you know, it was very obvious that there was something in there that wasn't meant to be there.
Yeah.
So I went into the bedroom, I was lying on the bed, and I asked my husband, I said, come here now, just to have a feel of this. And normally, you know, I'd be the one going, oh, I've got a cold, I'm so sick, you know, this drama. And he's like, will you stop moaning? You know, you stop me moaning over minor things. And then he had a feel, and he's like, oh, Jesus, that doesn't feel right. So, not saying, you know, I kind of trust when someone else said to me, that doesn't feel right, you're like, oh, God,
yes,
maybe it is something.
Yeah.
So, the way you start doubting yourself in your head. And
Sarah talks about her expectations around cancer.
I was 37.
Yeah.
Cancer to me was a pea-sized lump.
Yeah.
It was sore at that stage, so cancer to me didn't present as being sore.
Yeah, yeah.
I was Googling, obviously, and it was more leaning towards a cyst kind of thing.
Okay.
And I've heard of people having cysts, you know, going in and they think it's something and it turns out to be a cyst, and the fact that it was sore, I was like, I wasn't saying I was convinced of myself, but I don't think I really thought I had breast cancer, to be honest, you know, at that stage. I knew there was something wrong, but, you know, could it be something or nothing? And as well, I suppose I'm contradicting myself here, the doctor had said to me she wanted me to be seen within the 2 weeks, so I went home and I was Googling and I came across some triage thing that the breast check use. So when you're asked to be seen within 2 weeks, it's the doctor thinks there could be something, you know, serious. So
yeah,
and I was kind of going, so it didn't, you know, I was working, I was busy, it was in the back of my mind, but I wasn't maybe convinced that I had breast cancer.
You know, so your anxiety levels were okay, like
I just find when I get busy doing something, you forget about stuff, and then when you're on your own in the evening, then it kind of crawls back into your head. So I had the appointment for the Friday, and I was like, okay, listen, I can't go on holidays for 10 nights. Family were coming, extended family. I knew leaving at 2 weeks, and if it was something, that would be like 4 weeks before anyone had seen me. So I ended up going over to the Beacon in Salford. Yes. I went private to get that done. So I went over there on my own because I hadn't told anybody about it, bar my husband and a couple of friends.
Okay.
Because I knew if I told my mum, Jesus, like she was coming on holidays as well. And if I had told her, the holiday would have been ruined. Not ruined, but, you know, she would have been up to 90. And I was in my head, I was kind of going, Jesus, this could be the last holiday we all have happy, you know, just for, like, I don't know what the equivalent is, out of sight, out of mind for, you know, if you don't talk about something, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't want to be sitting there, known, we're out for dinner. My mom, you know, would have been just putting on a strong face and would have been worried. So it's just easier, isn't it, to just kind of not tell people stuff like that when you don't know. I didn't have an answer at that stage. So there's no point in causing the drama when it might have been nothing.
Yeah.
So I went over to the Beacon on the Thursday. I went on my own. I like doing things on my own. I know that sounds a bit odd. If my husband was here, he would have come with me. I'd have loads of people to come with me, but I like going on my own. In an odd way, you know, if you're delayed at a hospital or something, I always feel guilty for the person with me that I'm delaying them. So it kind of makes you a little bit anxious. So I'd rather be on my own. So if I'm delayed, it's just my own company. I'm not putting anybody else out. So anyway, so I went over and I was called in by the doctor, a breast surgeon or a breast specialist you're seeing with first. And there was a nurse there. So she examined me, and again, she was asking, like, you know, did you fall? Did you get something hit you or anything like that? And I was like, no, it was absolutely nothing. I said, it is sore now, but I think it's just because I've been messing around with it so much. That's the reason why it's sore. So the triple assessment's like, you know, it's like three hurdles nearly. Mm-hmm. So you go in to the doctor, and if she or he, if it was a she, thought, thinks you don't need to go to the next hurdle, you don't, you know, she can kind of say, listen, I had a feeling, I don't think it's anything. So I knew at that stage, and she had this marker out, so she drew three circles on my breast.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, Jesus, what's the three for, you know? So at that stage, she could feel two lumps in my breast, but they were so close together, to me it felt like one.
Okay.
And then the other one would have been kind of where your glands are in your breast. So at that stage, I was like, okay, like, it has to be something, this isn't right. So then I went for the mammogram. So the girl doing the mammogram, they don't say anything to you, you know, that's just you go in and you have it done. And then I went then for a biopsy. So the doctor came in and he scanned, was scanning my breast. And the first thing he said was, you'll need surgery here anyway. So I just kind of went, that stage, I was just right. He didn't say breast cancer, he didn't say cancer. And as well, I Googled before I went in, what does cancer look like on a screen? You know, like when you look at baby scans, I had Googled.
Okay, on the sonogram screen.
Yeah, not that obviously I'm no medical expert, but I was looking going, oh Jesus, that looks like, it looks like on Google. I was like, oh my God. And you know, the shadows kind of.
Yeah.
But again, it could have been a cyst or anything. But I just, when he said I needed surgery, you're like, oh, okay, hold on. You know, I knew. You couldn't need surgery for a cyst, I think, or they can drain cysts, I think, possibly. But I knew at that stage that I had cancer.
Okay.
So he'd done a load of biopsies. So at that stage, there was the two tumours, and he'd done a biopsy then of all of my lymph nodes, or a couple of lymph nodes that were swollen in my armpit. But I didn't feel the lymph nodes in my armpit swollen, but he, on the scan, you could see them.
Mm.
So that's kind of frightening as well. You know, you're trying your best to feel, but there was something there that I couldn't even feel myself. Mm. And especially the third one, the gland that they had highlighted, I didn't feel that. And I thought I was really good at checking myself. So I was just so lucky that I went at that stage. So anyway, that was that. I rang my husband because he was in Lanzarote and he was actually having lunch with his mum and dad. They went out early with him.
And at that point, did they say to you, this is...
I hadn't been told at this stage I had cancer, but I rang Joey and I was like, listen, this is not good. I just know. And it's weird to say, when you know, you know. I just knew by him and the surgery, the saying that I had surgery, and not saying, his face didn't drop or anything, you know, he was cool, he was a lovely, lovely man, but I just knew, reading the room, and there was a couple of girls around, and... I just felt like they were all just tiptoeing around me then. Like, I was just like, oh, here, just get me out of here. So, I was upset then that evening. I was trying to, I was like, oh, listen. And I was going to Lanzarote the following morning on the 6 o'clock flight. And I was like...
With your kids?
With my kids. My mum was on the flight and my brother-in-law and his wife. And there's a few of us. So, in a way, it was good because I'd be like that. I had to talk to them so you can forget about what's going on in the background. So, went on the holiday. We had a great time, but... You know, it was just...
You didn't say anything to anyone?
Bar my friends. That evening I went home because my husband was away.
Yeah.
And two of my friends, I went into them. I rang my friend and she was in work and she just panicked and then she left work. And then we met up in her house and I was just kind of showing them all the plasters of where all the biopsies were done.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know... I know I have breast cancer. And then it was just, you know, they were obviously going, you don't know yet. And, you know, you don't know until the results. I was like, I know I have it. So just have to go now and make face now for this holiday for 10 nights.
What was that like? Was that a huge strain? Or?
No, it was like during the day, you know, when the kids are at the pool or you're down at the beach and I wouldn't be one for getting into the water anyway. So I was just lying there and you're just lying there going, oh, geez, you know, when I'm on my own. So I kind of preferred having... loads of people around me. So in the evenings we were going out for dinner, there could be like, there was maybe 8-10 of us some nights going out for dinner. So that was good because you're constantly in distracted. Conversation.
Yeah.
And if anything, I was nearly acting, you know, the way to be happy. Yeah. Maybe I was, maybe my family look back and go, Jesus, she was delirious on all the days. Just the way she was like, who is she? But it was actually
you thought
good.
You were doing amazing jobs.
So I think if it had only been the four of us on holidays with my husband, the two kids, it would have been worse because my husband would have been getting it in the ear. Not that, you know, I would have been talking about it 24/7. Yeah. So having the distraction of other people was good. But during the day, like, oh, you're just lying there at the pool and at the beach and I was just in my head. And again, I'm messing. And it's really sore. My lumps are really sore at this stage from the biopsies. Not really sore.
Yeah.
But it's like... I didn't have to take tablets or anything like that, but you know, you're very aware that you've, you know, if you lean, you go, oh God, maybe. So there's a constant reminder there.
When Sarah returned from holidays, she went to the hospital to receive her diagnosis.
The hospital was really busy and I was kind of looking like my appointment, I think it was 2:30 and it was kind of 2:45 and then I was like, oh, and they're normally on time. I was like, how come all of these are getting called in before me? I was like, it must be because she has bad news and she knows I'm going to be in there ages.
Okay.
So you know yourself, your mind starts playing tricks and so I just went in then and you know, you kind of think about the doctors delivering this message to people. You know, as a not a doctor, I couldn't imagine having to tell somebody they have cancer, but they're so... I suppose they have to be practical, like, and say it straight how it is. So yeah, it was, the message was just delivered. The doctor was in front of me and Joey was beside me and there was a nurse in the background. And it was just like, listen, the biopsy results have come back. We don't have all the results back at this moment, but what we do know is that you do have breast cancer and that we don't know the type of breast cancer you have yet. But based on the results we have so far, we do know that you will need chemotherapy. So you're just like, sorry, you know, the way it's just like, excuse me. And then my husband kept on going, like, I don't even know why he's saying it. He just kept saying, like, chemotherapy, she needs chemo. He just couldn't get his head around chemo. And I was like, yeah, she said chemo, will you shut up? You know, that kind of way. And so then she was doing her job about telling me, you know, at that stage, they said they were convinced it was in my lymph nodes, but the first biopsy came back and it was negative to having cancer in my lymph nodes. But she kind of explained that your lymph node, you know, is like a bean, and if they go in at one point, there might not be cancer cells in the point that they went in at. So, you know, they want to go in again because they were pretty sure there was cancer by the look on the ultrasound, and that I had the swollen gland in my breast there. And so, yeah, like, I just couldn't speak. She was telling me all this and it was just information. I was just like, just get me out of here. Like, yeah. I can't deal with this. And I didn't want to cry. I was fighting back the tears. I know it would have been fine to cry, but in the back of my head, I was like, just get out of here. She needs to see the next patient. I'm going to start crying and nothing's going, the information's not going in. So it's actually pointless you telling me all this. So yeah, I just got, I once said, she asked me, how are you okay? And my mouth opened, but no words came out. So I kind of looked at my husband and I was just shaking my head at him going, is it to go, even though she's in front of me, he's like, I was shaking my head going, tell her to shut up. I just can't talk, you know, like, anyway. So, yeah, like, you know, then I was panicking about, like, hospitals and, like, you know, because I ended up going back to Vincent's because I just went there just because I needed the appointment quickly. So that kind of got into my head. Then I was panicking over, oh my God, I'm going to go back to Vincent's house. It's going to happen. And they were just saying, listen, don't worry, you know, we'll get you sorted. Don't worry, we're really going to look after you. And don't be worrying about them kind of things. I was
Because was your, were you receiving these results in the Beacon?
I received them in the Beacon,
So I was straight into logistics.
I went straight into logistics. I was like, okay, I had visions of my file sitting on a desk in a hospital. But do you know what I mean? They're not like that. They're on the ball with everything. Like, every time they say they'll ring it. You know, there's no messing. Like, they follow up on everything. And maybe I was just dubious from dealing with different companies or something over the years. And I was like, oh, you're not going to follow up on that, you know? Like, but Jesus, they did.
They just take that all off.
They take it. They're like, Sarah, just relax. We'll sort this. Don't worry.
Okay.
So that's the kind of mode I got into, going, okay, how to... And it was kind of hard at the start as well, because you don't know. I knew I had breast cancer. I didn't know what type of breast cancer. There's loads of different types of breast cancers. At that stage, you didn't know whether it had spread. So once you're thrown into this world, it's like, okay, so you could have breast cancer, but it already could have spread to your organs.
Yeah.
So then they were explaining, you know, you need to go and get an MRI and then a CT scan. So I was just like, oh, yeah, okay. And like, what? So you're just thrown into this world.
And it's not definitive at that point. You know, there's, like you're saying, there's so many degrees. Okay, we've got this far in the confirmation, but there's then a whole other rake of stuff.
So you're just getting the basics.
Did you leave? Did you get up and...
Yeah, I got up then. The nurse had her arm around me. And then at that stage, when I was leaving, I was the tears were starting. So then we went in, then there's a room where the secretary stays. So I went into her, and I'd spoke to her before at my initial biopsy, just chatting. She's a lovely lady. And I just went into her and I was like, I've got, can you believe I've got breast cancer? And she's like, oh my God. And then, like, I was getting upset. I was crying. Joey was crying. She was on the verge of tears. Because I was just like, I remember roaring, just going, oh my God, how am I going to tell my mom? And I didn't even think of my husband with me, because I don't even think of him. I just think of him as being kind of... I didn't feel sorry for him, you know.
I totally get you. There's something like, about your mother telling your mother.
And that was my first thing, going, oh my God, how am I going to tell my mom? Like, no worries about my husband at all. God love him, everything he was true. I was like, he'll be grand, you know the way. But then the nurse came in to me. And I didn't know at the back of the room she was there. She was writing. And I did clock in my head when I was being told by the doctor I had breast cancer. I was like, what's she writing over there? And she had one of the Irish Cancer Society booklets about breast cancer, and she was scribbling everything down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all the terms that I never knew, and writing down.
Okay, that the doctor was saying to you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So,
because okay. They go in one ear and out the other when you're in a situation like that.
Yeah. So she was just trying to talk me through it, and I remember her saying, she goes, I've got young kids as well, and you know, just trying
Does
to relate.
Kids come into your mind?
Yeah, it's just, like, I suppose, at that stage, you don't want to be dramatic, but you don't know, you think of the word cancer, and you think about death, and you're like, Jesus, am I going to die here? I feel fine, there's nothing wrong with me, bar I have this lump, and I have this disease that's, like, eating through my breast.
Yeah.
And, like, you're fine, like, I'm sitting here talking to you now, you don't feel any different, there's nothing, which is the scary thing.
Yeah.
You know, you expect to be sick, or maybe dramatically lose weight or something.
Yeah.
Like, nothing, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Bar the lump. So, the nurse was with me, and she gave me the booklets about the Irish Cancer Society, and she said, she was embarrassed handing me the booklets. She was real, I've said it before, like, that she felt so cold handing me these booklets, going, you know, you've just been told you have a disease, and here's a booklet, go on home now, you know, the way, and it wasn't like that at all, and I trusted in what she said, and I took the booklets and read them, and it's all about step by step about what's going to happen to you, the different types of breast cancer. Like, I knew the word CT scan, I've never had a CT scan in my life, I didn't really know what a CT scan was and what it was actually looking for, so stuff like that, instead of going online and Googling, you know, you had it there in black and white in a booklet, and it was just, and then she had all the notes in the back, it just meant a lot. So we went, so I was in the car, and we were walking back to the car, and Joey's like, what are you doing? What are we doing here? Like, are we going to chat about this? Are you going to tell your mom? Do you want to go home? How
long have you guys been married, can I ask?
Well, I only got married 4 years ago, but we're gone out since I'm 20.
Ah, so how did you meet?
I worked in Bugler's pub in Ballyboden, so okay. I've been working there since I was 15. I don't think you even work at 15 now, can you? The good old days.
She was 16. She was 16.
16, yeah. I started when I was in fourth year in secondary school. So I met him then. So he said, we just better get married. So that was, well, I was 4 years married in June.
Okay.
So
so he said, what are we going to do?
And, you know, it wasn't like, let's go home and talk about this. It was just like, this is you now, Sarah. Are you going to tell your mom and dad now or what? And at that stage, I was actually going to ring one of my friends. And Joey's like, no, just, not saying he was telling me what to do, but he was just relax. Just like, get into the car and we'll drive. So we went for lunch. And just to talk about a plan. And actually in the car, I was ringing the insurance. I was like trying to figure out everything. I was panicking, you know, just to get the practicalities, even though I was jumping the gun because I didn't know, you know, what lay ahead.
I know, but I think in a situation like that, sometimes you try to do things that you feel give you a sense of control.
Yes. Yeah. So I just, we went for lunch, and it was a grand lunch. It sounded odd. Like,
did you only eat?
Yeah, that's what my husband's slagging me, saying, you know, or my friend's going, you're only short of telling everyone what you had for lunch, because I always have the same thing. But I ate my lunch, and you think you wouldn't want to eat your lunch. And I kind of felt maybe this was our, sorry, being dramatic, like the Last Supper. This is me and you now. And things are going to change big time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just like, listen, okay, let's bite the bullet here, go up and tell my mom now, because I couldn't go home, it'd just be hanging over you.
I know. Yeah. So, are you very close to your mum?
Like, you know, we'd be talking every day, and she only lives up the road from me, so
okay.
And I don't know why, it was just a big thing, and it was even my mom, and then thinking about my dad and everything, it was just like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Are you their only daughter?
I've one brother, just the two of us.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, I'm grand, like, I've always been okay, luckily, you know, my mum and dad never had to worry about me, about anything, well, not that I know of, but now it's just like, oh God.
You know, seeing they're upset.
Yeah,
awful.
You just don't want, it's not meant to be like this.
Yeah, you don't want to be the person bringing it, you know, not that it's remotely your responsibility, but it's horrible to have to tell them something.
Yeah, and you don't want to upset people.
Yeah.
You want a simple life, you don't want people to feel sorry for you.
Totally.
Even though I'd never feel sorry for somebody that had, not sorry, but
no,
I don't want to be that person. And even looking at people that have cancer, I never felt that about them, but I just didn't want to be that person.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we drove up then, and it's just like a nerve. It's nearly like, you know, that feeling when you're in school waiting on your leaving cert results, or the nerves going, oh Jesus, here we go now. How am I going to do this?
Yeah.
So we went into the house. So my mum and dad live in a bungalow. So my mum was just in the sitting room, and my dad was out the back, and Joey just went out to my dad, and I suppose, you know, maybe you should, I'm not saying I should have, I never even thought about telling them together, but my mum was in the sitting room, and I just went in, and I was like, "Mam, I've got a bit of news." And then she's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was like, "I've got breast cancer." And I just blurted it out. There was no like, "There you are now," or "How's it going?" You know, I just said, "Get in and get it done." And my mum, she started shaking, and it's just like, oh Jesus, you know. And then I was trying to be strong because I didn't want to start crying. So at that stage, even though I didn't know where I was trying to be, it's going to be grand. I need to have chemo, but it's going to be fine. And I didn't even know that. I'm just trying to make less of a drama of it, to kind of make them feel better. But I didn't even know myself. So I was just trying to protect them from it, even though I didn't know. I didn't know what way everything was going to go.
Mm.
So Joey was out with my dad, and obviously my mum was upset, and he could hear carry on in the house. So Joey, I told my dad to come in, and then we moved into the kitchen then at that stage, and my dad just like, oh, you know, you can just see his face, everything just dropped, you know, the face and the shock, and it just turned white, and he was, no, 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 they have it wrong, they get it wrong all the time. So I don't know how many times he said, it has to be wrong, she doesn't have breast cancer. And then it was like, no, Dad, you know, I had to try and convince him. And that was kind of, that was tough going, no. And then even at that stage, I had only found out 2 hours previous that I had breast cancer. So I'm saying it constantly out loud, Dad, no, I have breast cancer, I have breast cancer. So then it was, I was trying not to cry. I didn't cry. I was just trying, because if I knew I was crying, if they seen me crying, they knew it was bad, even though it was bad and it was right to cry. But I just don't know. I just,
no, I completely understand.
I just block it because I was just trying to protect them. Yeah. And then it was just Joey, or my dad looking at Joey then, looking at Joey to go, as if I was just there, this person. And he's like, Joey, she must have this wrong. As if he was trying to get assurance from Joey that it wasn't true. And Joey's just like, no, Peter, it is, like, she does have breast cancer. She needs chemo, and we don't know all the rest. And I think sometimes people don't realize as well about breast cancer. They just think it's, well, you know, breast cancer, but the fact that it's spread and people die from breast cancer, you know, it's just, you know, I just didn't know how bad it can be for for some people. Sorry, just thinking about it. That was just really hard, trying to convince them that I had breast cancer. That's exactly what it was done only a few hours after I was told
you
myself.
Were still,
I rang actually the Irish Cancer Society on my own one day, and I just rang the nurse, and at that stage I still hadn't known what type of breast cancer I had, and I was just like, I have breast cancer. And then I was crying and I didn't know what to say, and she was just trying to talk me through, you know, the ins and outs of what will happen. And I was like, Jesus, I never even thought I'm going to lose my hair, a wig, and all, you know, and just kind of having a chat to somebody that knows about it, you know,
that way. In that world.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I think sometimes, can't it be easier to talk to someone who's not worried about you, if you know what I mean? Like, they don't love you.
Yeah,
so like that,
practical.
You can have a cry and you're not thinking, oh, I'm upsetting them.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember actually saying it, like, God, you know, sometimes you can be really awkward making phone calls. I was like, hi, oh, I've got breast cancer. You know, it's just like, like, I can't even, I'm saying this out loud. Like, I can't even believe you're saying these words. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So, then it's a big, you're diagnosed, then you're in and out of the hospital for weeks then, you know, with tests. So I went back then, that was on the Thursday, I think it was the following Monday, I went in for another biopsy on the Monday morning. Then that afternoon, I had a CT scan in the morning, and then I had the biopsy in the afternoon.
Okay.
And I look back, and the nurse made a beeline for me when she seen me in the afternoon, and she said, Sarah, I'm after having a look at your CT scan. It's grand, everything's grand. And like, she probably wasn't meant to do that, because only the doctors are meant to. And I was just like, oh Jesus.
Did she mean as in lymph nodes?
No, as in it hadn't spread to organs.
Okay.
You know, because you'd be stage four at that, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh brilliant, that's great. Like, And you think about it, like, I was celebrating that I only had breast cancer, only had breast cancer, and it was in my lymph nodes. I was delighted with that.
But it's amazing how quickly you get to that point.
How quickly, yeah. But I actually don't think I was ignorant at that point. I didn't really understand the implications if it had have spread to my organs. I didn't know. I was just like,
okay.
I didn't really understand. I did understand. I knew what it meant, but I don't think you can process that information, you know?
Had it gone into the lymph nodes?
Had spread to my lymph nodes.
Okay.
So the doctor then came down to see me then that afternoon. She wasn't meant to, actually. She was really nice. I just remember that she came down. I was getting the biopsy and she waited outside for me. She was chatting to Joey and then she brought me, found a room. Wasn't even an official appointment, brought me off, and she's like, listen, you know, it hasn't spread to the organs. I knew already because the nurse had told me. So, you know, she goes, this is good news. This is great news. So at that stage then I started the process of moving, changing hospitals then. So that was grand, you know, the way it was done all in the background for me. So then, it was just about getting your plan in place at that stage. So I found out that I had triple negative breast cancer.
Okay, so, tell me what that means.
So the way, my way of explaining it would be, so when they do their biopsies, they test for estrogen, progesterone, and HER2 protein. So I tested negative for the three of them, which means my tumour wasn't growing as a result of these three hormones.
Okay.
So they have some targeted treatments if you have a breast cancer that is positive for one, any one of them.
Yeah.
But for triple negative breast cancer, there's no targeted treatment. So it tends to be more an aggressive form of breast cancer. So your only option really is to have chemotherapy and they throw everything at you in the hope that it will get rid of the tumours. So I knew at that stage the grade of the tumour was a grade 3, so they're graded from 1 to 3, so grade 3 is would be more aggressive, that the cells are just trying to get out and get around your body. So so I knew then when you Google triple negative breast cancer, it's just all negative city, so the information online is quite out of date as well. So I know people have to be aware of that when you're Googling. They're based on studies that are done over 5 years, so you know it could be a study that's a couple of years old. So there are more positive stories out there for triple negative breast cancer. So at that stage then it was just about getting the plan in place. So I moved and I met the breast surgeon. I met with him and he just said to me at the start, he's like, you know, you've got triple negative breast cancer, it's in the lymph nodes, it's going to be a year out of your life, and you can move on. And I was like, sorry, a year? Like, hello? So wait, what? So I knew about chemo, but I didn't realise, you don't realise until you're actually in it, how long it is. And I say to people, a year, and they're like, geez, that's a bit long, isn't it? Because we're only ever used to having, say, a chest infection, getting an antibiotic, and you're better in a week. But it's, he's like, oh, it's a long, long process. And he goes, you'll come out the other side. Obviously he didn't know that at that stage, but you know, he was being positive and going, listen, just focus on this for the year, accept that you have to take a year out, and you'll be okay.
Sarah speaks about telling her family members about her diagnosis. She remembers the moment she told her young son.
He was sitting at the kitchen table doing his homework, and I don't think I made a conscious decision to tell him then. It was just like, okay, it's quiet. And my husband was there. Let's do this now. So he was there. And he kind of had an idea because the most people coming up to the house and people were sending up dinners, you know, so I didn't have to cook, which was great. Like, you know, so nice, it's just a thing. Like,
it's the most helpful thing.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, for anyone like me, I just kind of reach, oh, here, I'll just have like a crisp sandwich or something, you know, when I'm in bad form or something, or I'm just not in the humour, or you're in and out to hospitals and you don't get time to go to the shops. And, you know, there was lasagnas, there was curries, there was everything, soups, everything being brought up to the house. So he did think there was something odd because he's 12 going on 13, you know. So we told him, it was just, listen, Ciarán, you know, I have breast cancer. And then he just started crying, you know, he was roaring, God love him, like, and you think of him, and he just associated the word cancer with death, and he's just like, are you going to die? And that's one thing that's in the booklet. Like, I didn't understand. Obviously, your reaction to a child, you want to protect them, and yeah. your reaction to, of course I'm not going to die. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at that stage. It was never on the cards. It was never said to me that, you know, you're going to die. I knew I wouldn't die, but I didn't know. But, you know, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I was you know, going on this path, and I was not saying that the doctors don't know that you're going to be cured, but you know, I was confident I was going to be okay. So it was just to assure him that, you know, we were in the best place. I was getting the doctors, the nurses, everyone was going to look after me, and I was going to get the best treatment possible. But yeah, you know, you just think of his little face, you know, the way he's just sitting there. And
what did you... You said it says in the booklet.
It says there's advice about how to talk to children when they ask them kind of questions. Yeah. So like that, you kind of flip it and say...
So you don't say, no, I'm not going to.
You don't say you're not going to, because nobody knows anything in life. Yeah. Nobody knows when anything's going to happen. So you don't want to make a promise that you can't keep.
Yeah. And they say sometimes with kids, like if they have an instinct about something like that, and that it's best to kind of not totally deny it, because they, like, their fear is justified, that was going to happen, but like it's a fearful situation.
Yeah.
And it's better. That's interesting.
Say, and I wouldn't have known that, only for I read it. So your reaction would be, no, of course I'm not. Yeah, but, you know.
But it makes sense that they're that scared.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it was like, I just couldn't imagine me... as a child, you know, and your mom or dad telling you something like that, and it's just like, you don't want your kids, they're meant to be kids and they're not meant to be worried about stuff. And I suppose, like, it's just my husband then rang the school just to tell the teacher, and the teacher was great, and he called him out and just had a bit of a chat with him, and then some of the parents were texting me to say that he had told the lads in the class.
Okay.
So which was a good thing. Know, yeah, and then the mums were coming back and telling me, listen, he said this,
and that's really good.
Wasn't getting upset about it in school, but I think he was just saying in practical, and it was good that he was able to do that.
Yeah,
and
reassuring then, for you to know that he had friends he could tell.
Yeah, and then I had to make sure that I told, obviously the parents knew, so they could have their conversations with their kids. So you talk about cancer and you think it just affects your family, but it affects his friends, their parents. You know, these are all conversations that happened because of me in all these households, and they're conversations that you don't really want to have, that you don't want to have with your children, but, you know, it opened up kind of a can of worms for everybody around to chat and put fears in kids that I didn't want to have to do.
So the first treatment, what was that like?
First chemo. Oh god, I was so nervous going in. Jesus Mary and Joseph, because I had googled again and it was like, oh, see, people having allergic reactions and all this kind of, so I was like, oh, here we go. So my nurse on the first day, Anne-Marie, and she was like absolutely brilliant, and I was like, he says, you're not going anywhere. So the minute this stuff starts going into me, you're staying with me because I'm afraid something's going to happen. And she was like, you'd be grand, I'll stay with you. So I went in, I didn't know what to expect. I was going in and I was actually embarrassed going in. I was like, oh my god, I'm 37, I'm going into this cancer ward, day ward, everyone's going to be looking at me. Like, absolutely stupid stuff you're thinking in your head. Mm. I went in, nobody cares. No, I'm not the youngest. I wasn't the youngest. There's people there in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, every age group. But everyone from all different walks of life, and we just all have this in common. Most women, I think there was a couple of men that were there that had lung cancer, but it was mostly women the days that I had chemo. Mm-hmm. And just... I actually used to, enjoy going in then, because I could be sitting there having the chats with people that know what you're going through, instead of reading it online or on a Facebook group.
Yeah. Everyone says that.
Yeah, it's just going in, and like my husband used to come in and he'd work from home, work from Vincent's. He'd bring the laptop. And sometimes I'd be like, Joey, you don't really need to come, because I'm just going to be sitting here chatting all day to the girls. Kind of way. It's like, you could stay at home, but he liked coming in and like that. He came in all the time, but I had plenty of people to come in with me, but I don't think if my mom had to come in with me, she wouldn't have been able to cope watching me there, because the first chemo I got was red. It was actually like red stuff being pumped into you. It looks horrible.
Yeah.
And I just think my mum would have been roaring. Yeah. I wouldn't have been able. Yeah. So you need somebody strong with you. Yeah, and at that stage, I knew what I had. I had breast cancer. I need this treatment. Let's go. Let's do it. And move. Like, there's no tears anymore. Let's do this.
Are you sitting in the bed or for the whole time? Or
no, you're on a recliner kind of chair.
So you're not moving around at all?
No. Yeah. Well, you can get up and go to the loo and all that kind of stuff. You? But you have your drip. Yeah. But they take it off you when if you come to the toilet.
Okay.
But, so I had my first chemo and all of a sudden my arm started getting really itchy and red. And
on
I was
the
just
first
like,
one.
I was like, hello, somebody. So, and Marie, the nurse, was there with me. And I was like, just take the needle out. It was in my hand. I was like, just take that out there. I'll just give it a good scratch. And she's like, I will not, because if I take that out, you won't get that back in. You know, my arm was, I wouldn't say it wasn't swelling. It just got really itchy and kind of hivey. And the nurse even said I never had seen anything like that before.
Okay.
So she called the doctor and the doctor was like, oh yeah, you must be just having some sort of reaction to it. So I was like, okay, I could deal with this. So they decided to give me like an antihistamine to kind of help with the reaction. So another way, you take your Claritin or whatever, but this is true IV. So got it, and then I was just like, oh my god, because I don't suffer with hay fever or anything like that. Mm. So I don't take anything like that.
Mm.
So because it was true IV, I was just like, oh my god, I got real dizzy and I was just real sleepy and I kind of don't even remember the first one. I was just, oh, this isn't like right. And my husband, I was getting up out of the chair and I was going and he was kind of holding me up and I was like, Joey, I feel like I've drank like a load of wine, or, you know, I feel like I was drunk, couldn't walk. Like I was putting one foot in front of the other. My speech was getting slurry.
Mm.
So I went home and I was like, couldn't function. It's like, just put me straight to bed. Mm-hmm. So I was in bed and I was calling him up. I was like, Joey, this isn't right. I don't know what's wrong with me. How am I going to do this? I can't do this 16 times. So I was in my head thinking, okay, it's my body after getting all this stuff pumped into me. My body's like, what's going on? And then I was thinking about what you see in TV and I was like, oh, this is exactly. Now, I didn't feel sick, but it was just, I was dizzy and couldn't speak.
Had they told you how you might feel afterwards? Have they given you a sense of what to expect? That you felt this is actually not normal, or
no, they didn't really say. Because sometimes as well, I don't really say things until I'm really, oh god, this isn't good. So, you know, I just kind of thought it was normal to feel like this after having chemotherapy, because I've never had chemotherapy before. So you're like, okay, this must be what people talk about.
Yeah.
So I remember my mom came up to see how I was after the first chemo, and I kind of went, okay, pull yourself together. You have to pull yourself together to show face that you're okay. So I remember going down and I was sitting at the kitchen table and my mom was talking and Joey was talking, and then I was just like, I couldn't stay up. I was like, I have to go back to bed, mom, I can't do this. And for me to do that, to not pretend I was okay, was like, that was really hard. And I was like, oh, how am I going to do this? So I went back to bed, and at that stage everyone went out of my head. Then I was just like, on my own here, you're on your own, you can't care about anybody else, you just have to get through this. It's like, this is going to be a tough road. So my husband was ringing the hospital then explaining what was wrong with me, and they said they thought it was from the antihistamine that they'd given me through the IV for the reaction. So then the next couple of days I wasn't well. I was taking anti-sickness tablets. So they tell you to take the anti-sickness tablets to prevent you actually feeling sick. So then I was taking them for the couple of days and taking steroids, and I was kind of getting dizzy and I just didn't feel well in myself. And it was absolutely horrible the first couple of days. And I was like, oh, this is like 5 months, 6 months of this. This is going to be, now I know what chemotherapy is. So after a couple of days then I was in the hospital, they were doing my bloods and everything. And I kind of said to myself, God, I don't really feel sick. Like, maybe I shouldn't take the anti-sickness tablets. So then at my next chemotherapy, I went in and I was explaining what I felt like. And the nurse said, Jesus, you could just be quite sensitive to the anti-sickness tablet we've given you. So we can change it. So anything is wrong, you come in and you tell.
Yes.
And they can change it. There's all different medications. So they swapped me onto a different anti-sickness medication. So I didn't take that for a couple of days, and I didn't feel sick and I felt much better. So then I rang the hospital and I was like, listen, I actually don't feel sick. Do I really need to take these tablets if I don't feel sick? So I ended up not taking the anti-sickness tablets. Now, I did have to take a tablet every day to protect the lining on my stomach for the chemotherapy.
Yeah.
But the anti-sickness tablets were making me feel sick, so I stopped taking them, and I felt much better then. Not saying much better, I was wrecked, but that dizziness and that weirdness was just, I just couldn't. I felt just really, my slurred speech, everything. So they were really affecting me that way. So once I stopped taking them, I felt as well as you could feel during chemotherapy.
Yeah.
My last chemotherapy was on the 11th of November.
Okay.
I only remember that because it's my husband's birthday. Okay. Oh, not that specific. So I went in on the 18th of November for my last chemo. So it would have been 16 and 16th chemo, but my bloods were taken and my platelet levels were too low at that stage.
Okay.
So the oncologist came around and said, you're done. This, you're not having any more.
You
so,
didn't have the 16th?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, how did that feel?
Because my husband normally was he was with me at every single chemo, but that particular day he was at a funeral, so he wasn't there. He dropped me in and he went off to the funeral. So there was a lovely lady, Nancy, beside me, and I don't know, I haven't heard, like I hadn't got her number or nothing, and I always met her at every other chemo, and she was beside me, and I was real happy that she was there. And I was like, I'm done, like, and she had the same type of cancer as me, and then she was getting upset, and then I remember her saying she was going to a wedding in December. It was on, her aim was to get to this wedding. I think it was like New Year's or something. And she was like, oh, I can't believe I'm so jealous. And I was like, I know, I used to be jealous of people finishing. And then I was like, sorry, I'm finishing, you're not. And then there was this man with this other woman. I never met her before. And I was hugging him pre-COVID, obviously. Yeah. Didn't know who he was. And I was just like, it's just like, I'm done. Like,
yeah. Had your hair fallen out at that stage?
My hair fell out after my second chemo. It started to come out. So I know a lot of women would shave their head before it starts, but in my head I thought I was superwoman and I had to see my hair falling out to believe it. So if I had to shave my head after a week, after the first week of chemo, in the back of my head I would have thought, oh, maybe it wouldn't have fallen out. So I had to see it coming out.
Okay.
It's like anything, if you're told you're going to lose your hair, you're like, no, I'm not. You know, you don't believe that medication can do this to you, even though you know it can.
Yeah.
So I think it was about my second chemo. So from about day 12 after my first one, my hair started coming out. So you'd be brushing it. And it wasn't a case of the plug in the sink was, and the shower was full of hair. It was just when you get out and you dry your hair, there was just streams coming out, and my hair is quite fine anyway, and fine hair.
No,
so then be brushing it, and then there'd be just hair, and then you'd be eating a sandwich and there'd be a hair in it. It was just coming out then everywhere. So I remember my second chemo there, and the nurse, and there was hair all over my arms coming out, you know, falling out my hair, and I was like, okay, I have to make the decision now to go and get it shaved. So I'd organized my wig and everything prior to chemo.
What was that like?
Well, I was told you're meant to go before you start chemo, just it not saying it's too late when you're already bald, but so they can get an idea what your hair looks like. So my hair is in a bob, and I've got dark hair, so I was quite easy to fit for a wig. So I went down with my friends, tried on the few wigs, and it was grand trying them on because it looked exactly the same. I brought my mom then for the fitting, so you order it and then the wig comes in. So my mom came down with me for that, and so I still had my full head of hair. So they put like a swimming cap for all the world on your head before they put the wig on. So the swimming cap, I'm sure there's a proper name for it, was put on me, and my mom was there, and then my mom just started roaring, crying, and left the room. So I remember the girl, I went down to Roaches and came in to get it done, or to get the wig, and I was kind of annoyed at my mom then. I was like, Mom, I need you here to tell me, like, do I look ridiculous with this wig? Even though, you know, and the girl putting the wig on, and she was she was telling me her child had cancer at a young age, and she was trying to, because I was nearly getting annoyed at my mom, going, listen, will you, like, put yourself together. I need advice here. I brought you for help to tell me, and she just couldn't do it. And the girl, she could see I was getting frustrated, and she understood why, but then she said, listen, Sarah, like, your mom, it's like looking at your child. You imagine looking at your kids, you know, doing this. And I was like, yeah, I know. But at that stage, I had fully accepted, but my mom obviously was still, it's very difficult to look on at your child, trying on a wig, for, you know.
Yeah.
So do you know, my mom has never seen me with my bald head. She never seen me. You know, I always had my, I wear the wig when I was going out to the shops or that, but I'd always have a headscarf on in the house. But yeah, she never seen me. She didn't want to. She wouldn't be able to. She goes, that would just break her. So now there has been some stuff, you know, through the Irish Cancer Society. And they have pictures of me with a bald head, and she's seen that, but she's only seen it in a picture. So she said it doesn't seem real because it doesn't, you know, it's in a picture. But she never seen me. She said she wouldn't be able to cope. And I get that.
Yeah, yeah. How did you feel about it?
The day I got it, so my husband came down with me. Yeah, like, to be honest, it was another tick box exercise. So the sooner I got my hair shaved, the sooner it was near the end of treatment, the sooner my hair would start growing back. Everyone says to you when you have your head shaved that you look like Sinead O'Connor. This is it's a cancer thing, Sinead O'Connor, you know, and beautiful. And everyone's like, you're as fit as Sinead O'Connor. It's kind of, I'm not saying it's a running joke, but you know, in the cancer community, but it's a great compliment. So I remember getting it shaved, and so when I got it shaved first, because I'm so dark, you could see that, you know, like 5 o'clock shadow thing. I was just looking in the mirror, and then the girl put the wig straight on. So, you know, it was just like, okay, so you went from bald to the wig, and then I looked like me again. So my husband didn't really say anything in the room, and then we were walking back to the car, and then he started roaring crying, and I was just like going, I said, so I'm the one who got the head shaved. And he's just like, I think that's when it hit him that I had cancer. And he was like, oh Jesus, Sarah, like, this is so real now. You know, because it doesn't seem real, because I was never sick, you know, that you're sick, like, you don't feel sick, and chemotherapy makes you sick, makes you lose your hair. It's hard to kind of process.
I know. Yeah. Sarah talks about the reality of her treatment.
Yeah, well, I think first when I found out I had breast cancer, I was like, everyone's like, oh, just get a double mastectomy. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, at the start, I was like, I want a double mastectomy. And the doctor's like, no, no, you won't be getting anything. And, you know, you only get
what's
necessary. So I just thought it was as simple as you just have a double mastectomy and then life goes on. But no, I would have been a candidate for a lumpectomy based on my MRIs before surgery. They couldn't see any tumor or anything left. So what they would do is when they do the biopsy, they put in like a pin. So they take out the pin and everything around it. So if I didn't have the BRCA2 gene, I would have been able to have that. So I didn't feel bad about having it. No, I just went, I've got cancer, I'm going to get cancer again. Just do this, it's fine. The nurses, I remember in the hospital, were very much, you know, when I was having the surgery, going, Sarah, like, it's going to be a big shock now when you wake up and you look down. And I was just looking at them going, it won't be. And they just thought I was being positive. I was like, listen, girls, I'll be grand, trust me. And then they were as well kind of going, well, you're the one that has cancer and you're the one. So, you know, they kind of weren't dismissive of me either. They were, I was like, I know what I'll be like and I'll be fine. And I was. And
were
I,
you?
Yeah. I woke up and I just looked down. It's very odd. It is odd. But yeah, it was just like the relief.
Really?
Yeah. Because between chemo and getting surgery was 5 weeks and 3 days. I swear I wasn't counting. I was meant to have surgery after 3 weeks, but my bloods were too low. So in my head, I was, okay, I've no chemo in me. Is this cancer going to start growing back?
Yes.
So I was waiting on the phone to ring. I was going in to get my bloods done. It was like, again, waiting on an exam result. The knot in my stomach, then the nurse would ring and say, listen, Sarah, your blood's too low. The doctor's reviewed it. You can't have surgery. We'll give it another week. And I was just, oh my God, nightmare. So that was hell. From chemo to the surgery.
Okay.
Waiting. And then I remember the doctor rang me and he's like, yeah, the bloods are okay. And I was just like, yes, delighted with myself. Imagine being delighted going in to get a double mastectomy. Get me in there. And I wouldn't believe it was happening because I had in my head, I don't know why I was thinking, I don't know, watching programs about surgery. You know the way you hear people, they get the phone call the night before that the operation's cancelled and all this stuff. So I was in the hospital and I was being checked in and all the rest, but I wasn't convinced it was going to happen until I was actually being wheeled out and being knocked out. That's how, you know, I was like, wait, I'm waiting here. And even the nurse was like, you're in here now, it's going to happen. And I was like, no. They must have thought I was mad. Like, so yeah, so the relief of that was just
And what happens next after the operation?
So I had the operation. I was in for 5 nights. I got out the day before Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And then I went in for the results then on the 2nd of January. I think that was the Friday.
Okay.
So going in for the results then, I remember just going in
sitting
there.
This is the
results
of whether the chemo has been successful.
Yeah, so you're going in to know whether there are any cancer cells left in your body.
In your entire.
And if that happened, you know, you'd have to go on and have more treatment.
Okay.
So I remember just sitting there. Like, I suppose when you look at somebody and you go, oh my God, how did you cope? You just have to. You just, you know, the nerves and trying to put it to the back of your mind. And you get very practical about stuff as well. You know, you just go, just have to get on with it. So I remember going in and I'd have my headscarf on and there was a couple of men there and it was obvious their wives or their partners or whatever were off getting mammograms and all the rest. And you can see them looking at me going, oh, Jesus. You know, I'm sitting there with the headscarf. So I was very aware of people looking at me, and they're not looking at you in a bad way. They're like, oh God, please don't make that be me and my partner. And me and Joey are just sitting there going, ugh. So called in then, Jesus, waiting for your name. And you're just like, oh. So going in, and the doctor was standing up at his computer and he just turned around and he's like, good news, guys, we got the best result here. So it's just like,
aww.
I didn't even cry at that stage. You're so used to getting bad news. Yeah. I was just like, I didn't know how to react. Yeah. And then he was like, I had, the phrase is PCR, pathological complete response. So that means when they remove the breast tissue and the lymph nodes that were taken out, they examine them and there's no cancer cells.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the... That's the outcome you want.
Yeah.
And then he's like, listen, refer you on. I was getting referred on for radiation then, but he's like, you're not going to be back here again. I just know it, you know, being positive.
Did
and
he?
He's just like, oh, listen, got the best results. Go away now and you just have to live your life. Well, I knew I had to have radiation and all the rest, but you know, it was just like, okay. And then he went off then to the next person, and the doctor kind of does his rounds in the rooms with all the patients, and then the nurse stayed with me, and then I was just hugging her because, you know, I had more of a relationship with her. Michelle, I remember. And then I was just like, I said, I have a half a bottle of champagne at home. I don't know why. So my friend bought me a half a bottle of Moët. You know, I always liked the look of them, just a half bottle. And then she's like, just get a bottle. What are you doing with a half a bottle? And I was like, I'm not in the humor of drinking. I can't drink, you know, that way. It's just kind of, it wasn't the least of my thing. But anyway.
Did you go tell your mom?
I rang her straight away and it was just like, great news. And it was just like, you know, just, it's great news. Mm. It's fantastic news, but it's just like, Jesus, I was never sick, you know, that kind of way.
It's weird
going, I'm celebrating something that I didn't even know that I felt that I had, you know.
And so what came next, the radiation or reconstructive surgery?
I haven't had reconstruction yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
okay.
I went to meet the plastic surgeon, so he recommended that I couldn't have surgery or reconstruction surgery at the same time as my operation. They removed my breast because I had to have radiation, so he said it would damage the implants.
Okay.
And I know some women do have it at the same time, and I think there is a small, like, it's not, but you know, it's something I think some people can get done, but I couldn't get it
done. Was that disappointing?
No. I just said, get rid of them. I'll do it at a later stage.
Okay.
It's a longer surgery as well.
Yeah.
It was over Christmas. I love Christmas.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. Yeah, just do what you have to do. Do the basics and we'll look at the rest. And there were, you know, it is an option to have it done afterwards. You don't have to have it done at the same time.
Okay. Are you going to get it done?
Yeah, I'm actually going at the end of this month. I'm into James's on the 30th of this month.
Okay.
Just about a consultation about having it done. I was told I'm not a candidate for implants because of the radiation. My skin is too thin.
Okay.
So you have to go for Dieppe. I don't really know much about it. Basically, they remove parts of your body and create breasts from your stomach muscles. And, but I don't know. So that was medicine changes so much. You know, I might be able to get implants or whatever. So I have that consultation. I'm in no rush to get it done. I'd like to get it done. At the time, it didn't bother me. I was like, no, I won't get it done. But now, for clothes, I don't sound so, you know, everything just doesn't sit right.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I have prostheses, they're grand, but they kind of annoy me.
Yeah.
I take them off in the evening and they just drop on the floor. They're heavy. They're meant to feel like they're part
they go
of
into
your
bra.
Into your bra, yeah. So you're buying special bras and they're expensive. Okay. And you know, this kind of crack, you can't just nip into pennies and buy a bra anymore. Like, So yeah, so it just even swimsuits, you're buying special swimsuits, all this stuff. Yeah, I don't want to have to do that. You know, I just want to be normal.
And when, tell me then about the radiation.
So I had radiation that started at the end of February.
Okay.
I had that.
We're getting into COVID.
Yeah, I finished the week before Leo made the announcement about the shoot.
So it was just over about a month.
About a week, yeah, the week before, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was the radiation like?
Well, I had 15 sessions of radiation, so...
Over...
Well, you have it every day bar the weekend. Okay. So you're in and out. So the luckily, I only got burns kind of in my armpit. So it looked like, it's like sunburn for all the world.
Yeah.
And I'm quite tanned on one side. It's only a few minutes, but it's more going into the hospital, paying for parking, waiting around. You know, you're in and out, but it's a part of your day. And it's, you know, I'm not saying awkward times. They try and facilitate you as best they can, and they do, and they're fantastic. But... the actual having the radiation itself is, it's just, you don't feel like anything. You're just lying there, and then you have the girl or the radiographers kind of move your body. So you're kind of just lying there with no clothes. Well, you know, you'd have your bottom on and someone's physically moving you because they have to move you into the shape where the radiation has to go. So not saying it's degrading or anything like that, but it's just really odd. You're just lying there and you're relying on these people to move you and you know, just lift you, and then they're all, some of them are small. I was like, are you sure you're going to lift me? So I lift your upper body, and so I had that for so it was a bit, the good 3 weeks. So it's an odd thing, I think, for radiation, because the only side effect I had from it, you were tired, and then it burns and you kind of put your cream on, but I wasn't that badly burned, it was fine. But it's odd again, because you don't feel any, you know, where chemo, you have something physically going into your body. Surgery, you have wounds, but radiation, you don't feel anything bar the, you know, the couple of burns that you get from it.
And how have you, that was the last treatment though? So how have you felt since?
Well, I had to have my ovaries out there. Sorry, I had them out in July because of BRCA. So that was meant to happen in April. So I was mad to get the ovaries out, because I was like, listen, I'm going to get ovarian cancer here, even though there were, I had no symptoms. I had myself convinced, because I have the BRCA gene. So that was meant to happen in April, and it was cancelled, obviously, because of COVID. And I was up to 90. It was I used to wait every day in the postman. The neighbours must have thought I was mad. He was sitting in the window. That's it, the window, waiting, like, on the postman to come with the letter. So, yeah, my doctor was very good. You know, he rang me, and then he sent me a few letters, just kind of keep me updated. So eventually I got it rescheduled till the 29th of July.
Okay.
So I had that done, just a month and a half ago.
Okay.
So now...
And did that start menopause? Or
Had
the chemotherapy started already?
Yeah, I think when I look back... I would have had chemo induced, what's called medical induced menopause. And now I'm definitely in surgical menopause, because I have no ovaries. So I am taking HRT because I had triple negative breast cancer. It wasn't hormone driven. I can take HRT. So I've spoke to doctors that specialize in menopause. I went to a specialist, my gynae and my oncologist were all like, you're fine to take it. So I just needed that reassurance, because I had myself convinced then there was risks about breast cancer. But I've had a look into it, and it's, you know, it's, everything is fine. The benefits outweigh the risks. So yeah, I'm on HRT, and now I'm actually sleeping better and everything now. So I just think, from the chemo and the reduction in estrogen from my ovaries not working, now I have the estrogen and the progesterone, I actually kind of feel a bit normal, even though I didn't realize I wasn't normal at the time, going through chemo.
And will you have to get further operations because of the gene? Like, is there
No, there's no more that you can do at the moment. So I've done everything. I went to see a specialist around pancreatic cancer and the risk associated with that. So I went to see him, and he said, I'm so young and I've no symptoms and there's no history of it in the family. He said to come back to him, he actually said, in 10 years. And I was like, seriously? And I kind of laughed, going, 10 years, sure, you mightn't even be here. But, you know, I'm on some list in some hospital, so, you know, I can be reviewed, because there's no screening or anything you can do for that. And I have to make an appointment, actually, to go and see a dermatologist, just for my moles, because you have, there's a link to an elevated risk of melanoma. So, and my dad did have melanoma as well. So it's kind of just to do everything I can to protect myself. So as far as surgeries are concerned, my next one is just my reconstruction is on the cards.
And how do you feel in terms of kind of anxiety and
Well, I was with my doctor, my oncologist, last week, mm-hmm. and I had myself convinced that I had a lump under my armpit here, so where the scar is, and my oncologist had a good look around, a feel around, and she's like, Sarah, that's your rib. And I was like, oh, sorry. Aww. So, do you know what I mean? So I've stopped feeling, and I've decided I'm not going to feel that again. Okay. I'm going to do it every 2 weeks instead of every day.
Okay.
Because you're messing around with stuff, and... So I'm actually going for a scan next week, she said, just to kind of put my mind at ease. And she says, there's not, like, I'm, you know.
Did you do any counselling?
I haven't started counselling yet.
I'm going to.
I didn't feel I would benefit from it until I had my last surgery.
Yeah.
Because nobody could, a counsellor couldn't convince, you know, tell me that I didn't have cancer.
Yeah.
You know, and I know for counselling, you know, they give you coping mechanisms and all that kind of stuff, but. I wasn't ready. I'm ready now to do it. So, I'm actually looking into that at the minute about going for counselling. Okay. Just to, I don't know, you know, when your mind drifts off just a ways of coping with it and trying to, not saying trying to switch off, but, you know, accept what's happened and move on from it. But I feel so much better now. It's like all of a sudden a switch has gone off in my head.
Really?
Even going to see my doctor last week helped me so much, and just talking stuff through, and even no matter how much I read it online or you talk to somebody in the same boat, when the doctor says it, it's just kind of, it's a nice reassurance. And she was having a feel, and she's like, it's your rib, Sarah, it's your rib. And I was like, okay, sorry, you know, that way. So now I know, like, you know, and I know she's sending me for the ultrasound as well, but I'm not worried about that. You know, the way I just know it'd just be for peace of mind. I'm only ready now to kind of put that chapter in my life behind me and go to counselling and just get coping mechanisms, and if my mind starts going off, I'm more than thinking about stuff, how to kind of manage that.
I'd like to thank Sarah for talking to me today. Every cancer story is unique, but hopefully the interviews for this series will prove that there are threads of commonality that can be pulled from each, which can provide support. I hope that this episode has brought you some level of comfort if you are experiencing or know someone who's experiencing breast cancer. If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed on this podcast, you can contact the Irish Cancer Society Cancer Support Line on 1800 200 700 or visit cancer.ie. You can donate online at cancer.ie to both help support breast cancer patients and back vital research. This series is in conjunction with the Irish Cancer Society as part of this year's Cups Against Breast Cancer campaign, which is proudly supported by Centra.